I want you to tune in. Are you ready?
Well, welcome to the Blackout Music Podcast called Feed the Machine. It's our brand new podcast. This episode, we have Final Fix from Belgium.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Well, Mr. Final Fix, I know your name is Sean, which is a really interesting name. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm half Armenian, half Belgian. So that's where the name came from.
Ah.
It's an Armenian name.
Armenian and, name. Okay.
Yeah, it means thunder. Well, lightning, I think. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And yeah, I'm 30 years old. I just turned 30, which is crazy because I think this is the first time I've actually said it out loud.
Oh, wow. So. Well, congratulations. Was it long ago or?
Yeah, in December. No, not that long ago. I just turned 30.
Okay.
Thanks, by the way.
How does that feel?
Strange, yeah. Because I don't feel like I'm 30 at all. I still feel like I'm in my early 20s or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I just need to grow up.
Like all of us. I met you briefly in person on the last Blackout we had here in Utrecht, but I was wondering, how did you get in contact with drum and bass at the first place? Because you told me you don't really go to drum and bass parties or anything like that. So I was wondering, how did you get in contact with drum and bass?
Well, the first time it was, I think, back when I was 15 years old, when my friends were listening to Pendulum and they showed it to me.
Then.
I think that was my first experience with, you know, drum and bass as a genre, really. Because I think I've heard some drum and bass tracks before that, but never really registered it as a genre
right. Until
I got to know Pendulum. And then, then I got to know Noisia and you guys, and that led to a whole new world of getting to know all the dark drum and bass.
Right.
In the beginning, I didn't even know that there was so much of it out there.
Yeah.
It was just Pendulum, Noisia, and you guys, and like the Prodigy wasn't really drum and bass, but those were the main things for me. And then I quickly started to learn about, you know, audio and Edrush and Optical and DLR and the whole bunch. And I was like, whoa, all this stuff was out there. Like, it's been out there for ages. I actually didn't start making drum and bass when I started making music, but yeah. And you, what about you?
What about me? Oh. We got in contact with drum and bass, like from the alternative radio we still had back then in Holland. And nowadays there's no drum and bass on national radio, but back then there was a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Especially a Friday night. There was a really cool drum and bass party in the venue where we still do our Blackout set, only it was in a different building, but it's the same company, Tivoli.
Oh, Tivoli Vredenburg.
Yeah, it was just called Tivoli before. They had Gabba Jungle Wars, for example, where they invited like Gabba DJs, but also jungle or drum and bass DJs. Like Groove Rider came, people like that, and I think Edrush was there as well.
Sick.
So that's how we got in contact with the drum and bass ages ago. So what inspired you to, you know, become a drum and bass producer?
Well, I started out. I was looking for ways to make music with a computer.
Yeah.
Basically, I just typed that in Google, how to make music with a computer. And then I got on this YouTube video that explained how you could do it with free software and stuff. And so I did that for about a year. That was back in 2010, 2011, something like that. I started out making just melodies and jingles, and I tried to make stuff that just sounded like music to begin with. And then I tried hip-hop beats, rap beats, but it didn't really work out for me because I always tried to tell a story and stuff. And I think I just put in too much melodies and storytelling in the beats. So then someone came along and just told me, like, you should try drum and bass. Like, you should just try it. Yeah, it's as simple as that. So I tried it and I was like, oh, yeah, this works. And then I started making liquid drum and bass for a couple of years. And I already knew about Noisia and you guys and all that stuff, but I didn't realize that you guys also made music with a DAW. I didn't realize that. I never thought about how you guys were making it. It was just like music of the gods for me. It was something like very special. Like it was almost not human. So when I realized that everyone was doing this with a DAW, I thought, holy shit, like, I suck at this. Like, my music is so shit compared to these guys. So that's when I tried to step up my game and take it more seriously. That was, I think, around 2013, 2014.
So how would you describe your style within drum and bass now? Like, what sets it apart from all the other producers that are in this scene?
I would say it's kind of dramatical, cinematic. I always try to focus on songwriting more than I do on sound design. So I think maybe in these times that kind of sets me apart. Actually, I'm mainly inspired by the music that first got me into drum and bass, which is like 2010 stuff, I guess. And like Arrakis was a huge inspiration for me for a long time as well. Just old tunes that have that old soul to them. I try to recapture that in my music now, but just with a little bit updated mixing style. I try to keep that old vibe going.
Yeah, I think like what sets the old productions apart is like, well, if you go back a little further, a lot of the music was made with hardware, you know, with samplers and synthesizers and just a couple of effects.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. You didn't start out on a computer, did you?
Well, we did. We had a MIDI sequencer.
Right.
We first started out in a program called Cakewalk. It no longer exists.
Cakewalk.
Yeah. It's now called Sonar, which is freeware, but like we started, it was even Windows 3.1, you know, it's like ages ago.
Oh, damn. My first Windows was 95.
Yeah.
But what is like, what's the process like? Was it like more recording loops and then putting them together?
No, you couldn't work with audio. Everything had to be either MIDI and then triggering synthesizers. Or we had a sound card that had 2 megabytes of RAM.
Damn.
And you could like approach that as a sampler. But that was before we invested money into samplers or anything. Like that was our sampler. 2 megabytes of memory for all the loops and all the hi-hats and whatever.
So how did you compose the tunes then?
Using those with limited tools, you're forced to being a little bit creative. And the only thing we could do is like run everything through a mixing desk live. So we did have like a distortion pedal. Back then we had a couple of synthesizers. It was always Nord Leads or Nord Modulars.
So was it one recording? The whole tune was one recording where you would turn the knobs live or?
Yes, for certain things we would, yeah.
I see.
Because we couldn't really process or cut audio like you can now, you know?
Yeah, that's so strange to me because I come from this new era and it's already so hard to make this music. And when I think about you guys and like the older folks, it blows my mind that you guys even had it like tougher.
Yeah.
I think the sound of it is so great still. I still find tunes from like 20 years ago or 10 years ago and I'm still like, whoa, how the hell did they do that?
Yeah, I think it kind of pushed being creative with the gear you had more than it does now, you know? If you can't find a sound now in Serum, you either, you know, you just download a couple of new sound packs or you try a different synth and then you're there, you know? Or you just whack on 20,000 effects and it might work.
Yeah.
And back then we couldn't do anything like that, you know? We had one delay and one reverb and that was it.
Damn.
Like, can you tell us a little bit about a track that you're particularly proud of and why are you proud of it? Or maybe there isn't one.
I think I like Tempest,
yep,
which I released, I think, back in 2020. That's a good one. It was also a big moment for me. That was the first time Noisia played it.
Ah, yeah?
Yeah, it was like a real feeling of recognition I got out of that. It was also one of my goals, so I tried to make it really good.
Yeah.
So that it could be played on Noisia Radio, and it happened, so that was a really good moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of Tempest. Maybe another one would be The Prophecy is pretty cool as well. Those might be my favorites, but I feel like I still have to make the best music.
Yeah, we all hope that. Yeah, of course.
I mean, the best is yet to come.
Always. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I remember for myself, for example, when we were doing the From the Shadows album, we had this track called Killing the Light. And in the second breakdown, we did some granular stuff with the guitar. And that just worked so well with the vocals. Yeah, it just created such a vibe that, you know, I was like, ah.
Right.
Not that I think that's our best track or whatever, but I remember like getting that done and we were like, oh yeah, that's really sick, you know?
You know which one I really enjoyed? Immersion.
Oh yeah?
It's not that old, but yeah. I really enjoyed that one when it came out. You know that bit where it goes, where you have this low-passed synth with a delay on it? How does it feel? I'll never let you down. I love that bit.
It
feels so huge, and I don't know how to explain it. Like the sound spreads over the horizon or something. It's really, I love that effect, and I actually tried it in one of my own tunes.
Oh yeah. No, that's good. Good copying is always good.
It's inspiration.
Yeah, of course. And we all copy stuff from each other. That's how the whole genre got made. You know, like inspiration comes from everything and anything. You know, so.
Who are your biggest inspirations?
Well, like when we first started out doing drum and bass, was definitely like the Bad Company, Conflict, Ed Rush, Optical, Stuck in Skynet, that vibe, you know.
Seems like the same guys for most of you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of us like kind of grew up in this scene at the same time, you know. And Noisia was a little bit later because they're a little bit younger than we are. But
you guys started in '98, right? Or was it earlier?
I think I met Renee in 92 or something.
That's when I was born.
Yeah. And now you're making me feel old. I think we started making music, which wasn't drum and bass, in 96.
Oh, you started non-drum and bass music.
Yeah, we started doing like Big Beat and Gabba and all sorts of shit, you know. We just wanted to get our head around like doing music.
Yeah.
So now that you are officially a drum and bass producer.
Yes.
What are your goals within the drum and bass industry?
Within the industry, might sound weird, but most goals that I had 12 years ago, I actually accomplished now. I didn't really dream that big, I guess.
Yeah.
Just to have people listen to it and to release on my favorite labels. And I didn't even have a lot of them. Like, I didn't really think about going further than Blackouts. That was already where I was like, oh, I need to reach that.
Right.
And now I'm there, and it's kind of strange. I don't really know. Like, I want to make money now, I guess.
Yeah, that's always good. So how are you going to approach that?
I don't know. I'm looking into it. Like, okay. I'm trying different things. I tried giving lessons.
Okay.
But it takes a lot of preparation and...
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I could offer that value, so I stopped for a while now.
Okay.
I'm going to try to maybe sell beats or something.
Okay.
I'm looking into that as well. But yeah, making a living off of it would be a cool next step for me.
Fine.
But music-wise, just to, you know, work with some of my favorite artists, that would be amazing, you know.
Okay.
Just to do some cool collabs.
Yeah.
And to see where it takes me, like, just to relax now, because I've been working for over a decade to get recognized and to show myself that I could do it. And I feel like I'm in a decent place now where I have, like, okay skill and I have okay connections and stuff. And now I can kind of see where it takes me, I guess.
Yeah. And what about like showing yourself in a physical way to your fans, you know? Would you go out and DJ or perform live, or is that nothing you aspire?
I never aspire to be a DJ, and you know, everyone keeps asking that, like, aren't you going to DJ, or you should do that, or you should, but it's not really something I wanted, but it's not something that I'll never do that, you know? I don't know, maybe I will, but for now, I'm not really feeling it. And also, the DJ life doesn't really go hand in hand with my lifestyle that well.
Okay.
I never travel. I never go to really crowded places. And I can't really stand loud noises that well. Okay. Which is weird because I make loud music, I know. But yeah.
It's just interesting. Like an interesting career choice then, you know. It's like making loud music for dark clubs with a lot of people.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I never really thought about it like that. It's strange, yeah. I never keep clubs in mind when I make music.
That's good.
I just think about what the listener is going to hear, you know, individually.
Yeah.
And yeah, I never did it any other way. And I love it. I just love it so much. That's the thing I want to do. I want to be able to spend all my time on that. But
I think a lot of your tracks really tell a story, you know, that a lot of the other harder tracks in drum and bass maybe lack a little bit, you know. You know, in some ways, you sometimes remind me a little bit of an artist that we released a previous album with on, which was still Blacks and Empire Recordings, a guy called Telemetric. He was in Corrupt Souls as well. He was really good in telling stories with his music as well. It's just still a shame that he quit making drum and bass, but he didn't really like DJing as well. So, nor did we, by the way, as well. In the beginning, like the first time we did anything like that, because we didn't DJ, we were more or less just like you, making drum and bass at home, and we never DJed.
How long did you make music without DJing? Because I thought I was like really strange in that regard.
Definitely a couple of years. And then at first we tried to do a live show, brought our sampler and, you know, synthesizers, but we didn't really have a good plan or anything. We just tried to get our music out then live at that moment, but that was hard and it didn't really come across. Back then, you didn't have CDJs or anything, so it was...
Oh, right.
You know, you'd have to get dub plates cut or play someone else's music, you know? There was just no way of playing your own music.
Damn.
And, like, the first time we played our own music was when we had, like, a normal CD player, and this was just, a student party, you know, in Utrecht somewhere. And we had a regular CD player, and we just played one of our tracks and then tried to mix in... I think we brought, like, 10 vinyls or something like that, you know, Wormhole, and then a couple of others in that genre.
Nice one.
And then from that point on, we did see, especially when we started releasing music on Decipher, which is Trace's label, that there was more demand for us as DJs. So we kind of had to, like, buy vinyl, start doing that, practice.
And could you make a career out of it? Or was it, like, also you had to do it on the side, or it was just not gonna...
Well, back then we were all studying. When we got a reasonable amount of international shows, that's when we came at a point like, okay, maybe we should put this study on pause for a little bit and see how far we can push this music thing, you know?
That's such an interesting moment to me. Could you already see clearly that there was going to be a future in this, or was it like some sort of gamble?
It was definitely a gamble still, yeah. The first American tour made us just enough money to be able to rent Tivoli for the first time, for example, you know? And we had like special deals with Stuck in Skynet and Cause for Concern that if no one would show up, they'd only get like half the fee or something like that, you know? So we wouldn't get hurt too hard.
Damn, yeah.
Luckily all went well, and that first party sold out. At first, we didn't have that much money, you know, but we were students before that, so we didn't really mind as well, you know. I had a rented house. It was basically the same as student life, only now we were doing drum and bass as a career, and that just steadily grew over time. Can you tell us a little bit about your creative process when you're writing or producing new music? Do you have like a special approach for new tracks or?
What I used to do was I used to work from morning till I went to sleep. I didn't really need anything to get me inspired. I was just motivated all the time.
Okay.
But now it's really different. Really different, actually. I just wait until I feel like making music. And sometimes I deliberately wait a bit longer to kind of make me extra excited to write a tune. And then I never like force myself to get inspired or anything. Like if I'm not feeling it, then I'll just watch a movie or do whatever and it'll come back. But the things that really inspire me are just mostly visual things like fantasy landscapes, video games, and also stories and philosophy as well. But I feel like the moments I'm having most fun writing drum and bass music is when I'm trying to deliver a concept, when I'm trying to tell a story that is really personal to me. For example, the Hope Is Lost EP was actually made that during heartbreak when ex-girlfriend just broke up with me.
Uh-huh.
I was in a really bad place then. I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. I just went out drinking all the time. And the first week I couldn't produce at all. But I think it was in the second week that I made Hope Is Lost. I sent it to Marv and then he told me to send it to you.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that he did. Like, big up, Marv.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, we're good friends now. So yeah, and then in that week that followed, I made the other three sketches for the whole EP as well.
Right.
It was a feeling that was inside me that I felt that I had to somehow get out there. And yeah, that's kind of what the EP represents.
Cool. You did well. I love it to death. And it's really good.
Thanks.
What kind of DAW do you use? And why?
FL Studio. I started out, as I said before, with this free software. It was called LMMS, Linux Multimedia Studio, I think it's...
Oh, wow. I've never heard of it.
It kind of looks like FL Studio. So when I was using that, my cousin actually told me about FL Studio. He was like, oh, I make music too, and this is what I use.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he installed a cracked version of FL Studio on my computer. I have the full producer edition now, and I bought it, so putting it out there.
Yeah, we produced in Fruity Loops for a little bit as well.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And what are you using now?
I'm now in Bitwig. Bitwig and Cubase still. We've produced in Cubase for ages. Like, we came from Cakewalk, like I told you, and then we switched to Logic for a little bit, which was still in PC back then. But then Apple bought it and made it Apple exclusive, and we were PC guys, so we hung on for a little bit. But then after a certain time, we were like, okay, we got to go somewhere else now because it's not being updated. And we tried Fruity Loops. We did quite a few tracks in Fruity Loops, actually.
Is it much different to work in Fruity Loops?
Back then it was. Now the whole approach of like how you construct tracks and stuff is very different than a traditional sequencer, because it's more like the step sequencer was always the basis where Fruity Loops came from, and now you can do a lot with audio and MIDI. And
like that's also why I stuck with FL Studio, because it was so similar to LMMS. I don't know, it's very visual as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
The moment I found out that, you know, guys like Belain and Signal at the time, now is Imanu, when I found out these guys were also using FL Studio.
Spore is also, for example.
Spore as well, yeah. So when I heard that, I was like, yo, there's no need for me to change. This is fine. This is good enough. And now that I'm comfortable with this, there's no need for me to change. But Bitwig, is that the DAW where you have multiple projects open? You can like drag a sound from one project to the other. Is that the one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can do that. It's like a cross between Cubase and Ableton, you know? And what I really like in Bitwig is its modular approach. You know, you can generate modulation from anything, you know, from raw audio or from incoming audio, you know? So that can create automation signals if you want, or so you can have like a kick drum influence the decay of a reverb, for example. But it just makes everything so much more flexible than Cubase. You know, Cubase is more the traditional sequencer, which is very good as well, and it sounds great, and I've used it for years and years and years. Bitwig is just a bit more creative.
I see.
Than Cubase is. And I tried Fruity Loops again as well, because I needed like working with Imanu.
Parallels.
Yeah, Parallels, yeah.
I love that tune.
Yeah, we started at Bitwig and then we went to Fruity Loops because he can cope with Bitwig, but he's like, his home is Fruity Loops, you know? And I've used Fruity Loops in the past, but it just takes me a little bit longer in Fruity Loops, you know? I'm a little bit rusty and fruity, but I get the idea though.
I have the same thing with Ableton. Good friend of mine makes music in Ableton, and whenever I'm working with him, we have to do it in Ableton. And I feel like a little bit...
Yeah, it's like having two left hands, you know, you don't,
yeah.
you miss your shortcuts. It's all just a little bit different, but I don't think like a DAW gives you a particular sound or anything like that. So it's just what you're comfortable with and, you know, whatever you think is working for you.
Exactly. But different DAWs can set you up for a different approach as well. But you're right, it's not really one sound or anything. Yeah.
So you said like sound design wasn't a particular thing you focused on, but you know, I find a lot of the sounds that you make do have like a really classy, filmish or cinematic element to it, you know, so.
Thank you.
Do you have any special techniques like with the layering and blending or, you know?
Well,
or?
I don't know if this is just me, but I try to have no overlap where I don't need it. So I try to keep everything as clean as possible, almost like a jigsaw puzzle.
Do you mean like sonic overlap or even like within time as well?
How do you mean within time as well?
Well, I know some people, for example, don't even use compression to sidechain, but they just use a volume tool to...
Yeah, exactly. That's what I do.
So you have a completely clean kick and a completely clean snare.
Yeah, I try to. Yeah, I try to do that.
And I mean, like sonically, like you can really make sure your leads don't have any low-end energy or mid-energy that can affect either the bass or other mids, you know, so you can like sonically split everything.
Of course, there's layers of high-frequency content and then low-frequency content on top of each other, because that's you can't really avoid that, I think.
No, that would be, like, because you said you were trying to separate everything like as a jigsaw puzzle.
As much as I can, but yeah, especially in the same frequencies. But often I also do it with different frequency spectrum sounds. You know, even if it's not necessary, it has an effect. It's kind of OCD, I think. I've been trying to do everything right for 10 years, and I think that kind of contributes to this to this way of thinking.
Yeah. So you don't really use sidechain compression, but you use more like volume automation to get...
Yeah, I used to use the Fruity Limiter for sidechain compression, yeah. But I started doing just volume automation, and it works much better for me. You can do it manually, and I love that.
You can save all the shapes and stuff, so it's, you know, you can very quickly get a shape you want. Yeah,
you can visualize it. You can just put your kick drum right under it and just draw it out as you want, the perfect size, perfect length.
Yeah,
all of that. So when I started doing that, that was kind of a game changer for the quality of my music. And when I started designing my own drums as well, like I usually make my own snares and kick drums.
Do you always use the same tools or?
I use Serum to make my snares and kick drums, but yep. I layer them with other sounds.
Right.
I think sound design isn't really my focus in the sense that when you have a lot of this music that is really sound design focused, where it's like, whoa, these sounds are crazy. What is this strange stuff? And then, yeah, this is really cool as well. But I try to have something melodic first and then make sounds that contribute to that vibe that I'm trying to make.
No, but there's so much to sound design, you know. It's not just a single sound which can be a standout thing. I mean, it helps if you have something like that. But also, like automation and modulation of tracks have a big influence of feeling, you know, of the whole feeling of a track, you know.
You mean the subtleties or?
Yeah. Subtle changes and, you know, like stuff influencing each other and stuff like that. Is that something you focus on or not really?
What I try to do is I try to get something to sound good enough so that I can confidently have it in my tune. And sometimes you need those details just so that the ear doesn't get tired from hearing the same thing. Or like sometimes you want to have that really deep feeling in your tune that everything sounds low-passed or whatever, but you still often need that high-frequency content in there in some way just to have that bed of atmosphere that makes it all make sense. But you guys also have a very cinematic sound, I think.
Yeah, and I love the cinematical tracks as well, you know, and tracks with a bit of melodrama.
Yes.
And I really love the contrast of, you know, having like a cinematic piece within a track, which can create a nice contrast with like a heavier element, you know.
Yeah, with a fat Reese bass.
Yeah, for example, like Arrakis or something like that, you know, that's like...
It's so good. I just love that. I remixed it as well, but I don't really think I did a great, great job, but it's okay. But no one will top Noisia's remix, so I shouldn't have, yeah. What was your first epiphany production-wise? The moment when you were like, oh, fuck, I should have done this all this time.
That's a good question.
No.
I don't really have a really quick answer for you, I don't think.
Well, for me, it was when I started making my own drums that really showed me a huge difference in sound in general. Like, the moment you get good at designing your own drums, it's like your music just gets an upgrade.
Definitely. Like, I remember one of the first ones. That was like, because, you know, we were still on our sampler within the computer, you know, on that sound card with 2 megabytes.
Yeah.
It was also hard to, like, process audio loops a little bit, you know? So you could, you know, you'd have the Amen break, for example, and a kick and another and a different snare. But how would you, like, retain, like, the atmosphere and the vibe of an Amen break if you didn't cut it to pieces, you know? We didn't, afterwards, like, years later, you'd get Recycle, which... like it cuts a loop and then it kind of like creates fake tails. So it's easier to like time stretch stuff to rearrange a loop without it, you know, being choppy or anything like that.
Oh, right.
Otherwise you'd get like little gaps of audio, which you were missing, you know. Once we figured out how to actually use beats as a sample and like not just have kicks and snares, but also like trying to get a little bit of funk in there, that seriously helped, you know.
I think it's often overlooked. I get sent a lot of tunes as well from producers who are starting out.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're just focusing on one thing and to get that one thing really right. And they're like missing the fact that they're making music or something.
That's where it should start, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You were saying you work in Fruity Loops. Are you someone that keeps in touch with all the like the latest technology and all the latest...
No, not at all.
VSTs and stuff now?
No, I don't even have FAP filter. I have...
Oh, yeah?
No.
You just work with like the base version of Fruity Loops and Serum.
Yeah, I still use the reverbs from Fruity Loops as well and the Fruity Convolver and, you know, parametric EQ too. I use... Yeah, most of it is Fruity Loops stuff. But I use Serum though, and I use Harmer as well. It's also from FL Studio.
Yeah,
that's actually my favorite synth. So I'm all the time. Harmer is.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I'm not really that great at it, but yeah, I love to use it. It's my go-to.
It's definitely a difficult synth.
Yeah, but it's just because it has so many options. The more options you have, the more difficult you can make it. But if you get used to it, it's really fun.
Like I'm a crazy plug-in order, you know, like I...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I really like trying all the new stuff. Like, see if this can get me anything new or, you know, yeah.
I'm never like that. Like, most producers are like that, like, from what I've seen. But I'm just like, oh, you know, leave me alone with all your new shit. I'm just trying to make music.
Yeah, but that works, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm more like, if my favorite tunes are already... made, I think, like all my favorite tunes are 10 years old or 15 years old, and I'm just like, okay, if they did it back then, I should be able to do good enough stuff with the things I have now.
Yeah,
I try to focus more on the vibe again and on the songwriting than on, you know, getting the latest plugin for the last few decibels to get it louder, and I don't know, it's just, no, I just try to. But what I do find is that plugins that create unexpected results,
yeah,
I think I should look for more of those to kind of expand my sounds and kind of get out of the routine a bit. The best things to invest in are the ones that give you unexpected results.
Yeah, that's why I love Bitwig so much, you know? They have a completely modular environment called Polygrid in there as well. And there you can just, you know, get an OSC and get a filter and get an audio sample and have everything influence each other. And, you know, you can do stuff that no other synth can do, you know? Because you just make up the whole structure of the thing at first. It's a bit like Patcher in Fruity Loops.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really interesting as well. Yeah, but then a bit different. Imano uses it all the time. I don't know if he still does, but he did back then. creating a snare, you know, with a sample, and then have like one noise generator creating a bit of noise on top of the serum snare with a send, and then combining everything again with a distortion afterwards. It just creates interesting workflows, you know, or signal flows that are difficult to recreate if you don't have patcher or like a modular thing. Like stuff like that in Cubase is almost impossible.
That's one reason I should actually also check out patcher more. The only thing I use it for is a mid-side EQ. So I made a mid-side EQ inside patcher, and that's the only thing I'm using it for now. But yeah, I should have a look at what else it can do. And you, are you more into the old school sound, or are you more into the new school sound of drum and bass?
Well, I think what I do think is, like, nowadays there's so much music being released, it's a bit harder to get an overview of what is actually good at the moment, just because there's so much. It's like, I guess so many promos is ridiculous. I think there's a lot of super interesting stuff being done now in all genres within drum and bass, even, you know, like the softer DLR kind of vibes, or the harder Eat Brain Blackout vibes, you know, or all the critical stuff as well. You know, I really like a lot of the critical stuff as well. I don't play it out that much, but I do love listening to it, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, top quality music. There's so many good producers out there. Like, it humbles me, really.
Yeah, and that's so different than when we started, you know, because back when we started, you had to really commit, you know, otherwise you couldn't get anything done. Like, you needed to buy hardware.
Yeah.
You needed to invest at least a couple of thousand euros or whatever.
Yeah, now everyone can do
it. To be able to make tracks. Yeah, and now you need YouTube, watch a couple of tutorials, download your trial Fruity Loops or Ableton.
In the last 15 years, the tutorials have really evolved as well.
Yeah.
I remember back when I started around 2011, there weren't really, like, nobody had Patreon, and all the artists were pretty... There was still some sort of disconnect between the
absolutely
the artists and
which made it a little magical as well, at least for me, you know, watching Ed Rush and Optical or Renegade Hardware as a
exactly.
label.
Exactly. Now it feels like it'll never be that way again, but
it did take away a little bit of that magic. But, you know, it's great that it made music creation more accessible for a lot of people. I think, like, the more people that make music, then eventually we'll get more interesting music as well, you know. The downside with all the tutorials is that you get a lot of tracks that sound exactly the same because everyone's incorporating the same tricks, you know. And back when we started, there were no tutorials, you know, we just had to try it out. So
I actually think now the rise of all these tutorials are actually a good thing to, you know, because people have more guidance to know what they should be doing. Like 10 years ago, yeah. everyone had the computer and the software, but they had no idea what to do. So you had tons of crappy music. Like, I'm sorry if I'm rude, but that's just how it is. Like, and now I feel like there's less shit music going around, or maybe that's just my circle. I don't know, but I have that feeling that everyone is getting more and more amazing at getting good sounds and fun tunes and stuff.
Yeah, no, very true. Amazing times ahead.
yeah. Maybe a few producers to look out for. Keep an eye out for Omnium. Keep an eye out for Neolith, for Nimian, Screamars as well. I know he's been doing really well, but
yeah.
Keep an eye out for those guys. Fudge as well. Oh man, I'm forgetting so many people. I wish I could, you know, support everyone. Thank you for having me.
Cool, my pleasure. It was nice catching up.
Okay, I'm out.